Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Cheaper foods in supermarkets, an end to passport queues at European airports, just some of the benefits that the UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer claimed yesterday after he struck that deal with the EU. However, elements of the deal, like European fishing boats having a further 12 years of access to British waters and the youth mobility scheme, have been met with strong criticism in some quarters in the UK. Olaf Gill, European Commission spokesperson for economic security and trade and UK relations, joins me on the line. And Olaf, some of the headlines from the UK newspapers: done up like a kipper, Starmer's surrender, kiss goodbye to Brexit, Labour getting it in the neck from some quarters today. Has the EU won the Brexit war?
Morning, Claire. Thanks for having me on. I think we need to move beyond this kind of reductive, simplistic Brexit era, you know, over the top sort of headline narratives and focus on what actually has happened here. I mean, this is the first EU-UK summit of this level, of its high political leadership level since Brexit. Lots of positive things have come out of it. We can see clear win-wins. We've agreed to move things forward on fish, on energy, on defence, and we've made commitments to go even deeper across the full range of other areas. That's ultimately going to benefit people in the EU and benefit people in the UK. Mm-hmm. So I think we should just stick to the facts. If you look at the UK reporting this morning, there's plenty of what you just described. If you look at reporting from across the EU, it's very balanced and reflecting the tone I just put to you.
Yeah, but I suppose you have to be mindful as well of the political realities in the UK and the growth of reform. And from what we read today, it seems the agreement to allow access to the British waters for fishers, that was a last minute one pushed by the French. I just wonder, is it a dangerous game to play politically if you look at where Keir Starmer stands at the moment, not just with reform, but with pro-Brexit conservatives as well?
Of course, we're cognizant of political realities, Claire, but I mean, here's a political reality for you. The UK is the, you know, our literally our closest partner in the EU. The trade agreement we have, the withdrawal agreement and the trade and cooperation agreement, is the deepest such agreement we have with any global partner. And that's not by accident. It's because, you know, our economies are intertwined. Our peoples move forward and back constantly. There's, of course, the question of Northern Ireland that's uppermost in European priorities. So all these things have to be kept in mind from our side. But if you look at what actually came out of yesterday's summit, there's plenty of good for both sides, and that's what we should be celebrating.
Do you think this is the start of something or the end of something? In other words, could we see closer cooperation now between Britain and the EU on other matters?
I'll put it to you a different way. Why would we not want to see closer cooperation between the EU and UK? I mean, we're dealing in an extremely, we're operating in an extremely volatile world right now. It's very obvious that we need to do more on defence, for example, but equally by doing more on economic cooperation, by doing more on, providing real tangible benefits to people's lives on both sides of the Channel and both sides of the Irish Sea, we're doing what we should be doing. And I think that is very much the approach that has been taken on both sides, and that we hope is the approach that will continue going forward.
And it seems more talking needs to be done on this youth mobility scheme. What's the blockage there?
Well, look, from our side, as we said, yesterday we made some solid deals on energy and fish. And for the rest, we've really kind of spelled out a roadmap for where we want it to go. As regards youth experience, what we want to happen is a scheme whereby young people from the EU and the UK can travel, work, volunteer, study in each other's territories. We're going to figure out the details as we go forward with the UK. But the point is that there is a willingness on both sides to make that happen for the benefit of young people on both sides.
And the UK is worried about a move back to free movement of people, which would be an anathema to many people who voted for Brexit. Is that what their position is?
Yeah, that's true. But this scheme that we're talking about isn't about the free movement of persons. We're talking about something that would be age limited, time limited, really subject to certain conditions, basically making it easier for young people. Many young Europeans want to study in the UK, that we know. Many young Brits want to study in the EU, including Ireland. So we want to make it as easy as possible for them in both directions.
And how worried are EU defence firms now that the Security Action for Europe Fund is open to the UK? Because they'd hoped that they would be able to get the bulk of the benefit there from the €150 billion euro that has been earmarked.
Well, it's like this, Claire. Our European internal market is always open for businesses from outside the EU. We welcome competition as long as it's fair. The UK has a substantial defence industry, and they're looking to ramp that up, I think, as well now in the new reality. So, I mean, this is fundamentally a good thing. Competition is a good thing. It will encourage our European companies to up their game, to be more innovative and so on. And that's something we can welcome.
Right. So there isn't going to be a Europe first policy. The reports were that that's what France wanted.
Well, I have to repeat that we're still in the early days of this. We signed a security and defence partnership with the UK yesterday. How exactly that's going to play out will depend, first of all, on how we develop things on our side and then how we develop things together. So it's too early to say, and we shouldn't be speculating about what might or might not happen yet. But fundamentally, it's a good thing that the EU is building a deeper cooperation with one of the only true, let's say, military and defence powers on the European continent at a time when there is war on our doorstep.
OK, let's move to other relationships now. On the war in Ukraine, Donald Trump had his call with Vladimir Putin yesterday. It didn't really seem to get anyone very far, but he's saying now that the US might pull back involvement in the situation with that line, "It's not my war." How alarmed is the EU at the prospect of the US bailing on Ukraine?
Fundamentally, our position hasn't changed. We remain firmly and unwaveringly on the side of Ukraine. We believe that any peace agreement has to be with Ukraine, for Ukraine, and on terms that are acceptable to them. Of course, our priority here is to keep the Americans in the fold and to keep them ideally tuned in to what we view as the reality of the situation. But, you know, it's not an easy time as regards geopolitics generally. And we are trying our very, 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 very best to make the case to the US that we need them involved and they have an important role to play.
Olaf, thank you for speaking to us again. That's Olaf Gill from the European Commission. Lucy Fisher is with us too, Whitehall editor with the Financial Times. Good morning, Lucy. Lucy, are you with us?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning to you, Lucy. We were talking to Olaf Gill there from the European Commission about the reaction to this deal in the British press. And there really are two schools of thought. There's the done up like a kipper side, and then there's the other side who believe, as does the British ambassador to Ireland, Paul Johnston, who said that this will make life much easier when he was speaking on Morning Ireland this morning with reference to businesses, of course. So who do you think is winning?
Well, look, I think you have to view this from Downing Street's perspective. The calculation they will have made, knowing full well that they were going to come in for salvos of attacks from the right-wing parties, the Conservatives and Reform UK, and also from the right-wing press in the UK, which has, you know, taken up the cudgel of Brexit, that, you know, many of the voters who care most about Brexit and the hard-line interpretation of it already don't vote Labour. So I think that is the sort of the calculation that Keir Starmer has made. And the argument, the narrative he really has to sell in the days and weeks ahead is that this is a deal that, you know, is good for the British economy, worth £9 billion to the UK at a time when growth has been really anemic and he needs to try and turbocharge the economy in order to boost public services. And that some of the trade-offs that he's agreed, including this very totemic issue of agreeing, you know, EU coastal states access to UK fishing waters for an extra 12 years is worth, you know, a tiny proportion of the UK economy in contrast, just 0.04% of GDP last year.
It does give Nigel Farage a clear line of attack. I mean, the Reform leader is already on the march after his result in the local elections. This really clears the path for him to make a very clear and concise argument.
Well, you'd think so on the face of it, but actually I've been very struck that, you know, the key issues that heretofore Nigel Farage has been arguing on and making, you know, building that momentum that you talk about have been about challenging net zero, have been about challenging woke issues and so forth. And that, to my mind, speaks to the fact there was a sort of a broader sense that the Brexit wars had been settled. Now, that's not to say that he's not going to reprise his arguments with this deal. And as you say, we've heard that today, him talking about this being a surrender of UK waters, that it's unacceptable that the UK would accept you know, a bigger role for European courts when it comes to, you know, the trade of agri-foods from the UK to the EU. And of course, Reform arguing that if this youth mobility scheme comes off, that it would be the thin end of the wedge in terms of a return to freedom of movement. But all that said, I think that Reform also know that there is a sense in which Brexit, the salience of it, has gone down, you know, in the past 5 years since Britain actually left the Union, and that there are more kind of pressing issues to people in the country at this time.
So if the economic benefits come to bear, as the Labour government expects they will, that Reform might well leave that alone.
Not that they'll leave it alone, but how successful a tactic this is, you know, remains to be seen. I'm just saying that Reform have been arguing on other topics. They've been campaigning more heavily elsewhere, in a sign that you know, there are different things that matter to people. And I do think there are, you know, retail wins, you know, down the line. I think it's a shame for Keir Starmer that he wasn't able to announce that British tourists will be able to use the e-gates at EU airports this summer, because that's something that, you know, many people who don't necessarily follow the ins and outs of trade policy closely would sort of understand as a win, if they can skip the sort of, you know, the lengthy queues that they've been used to having to stand in for the past few years. That would have been a win, but that may still yet come if Starmer can agree this youth mobility scheme with Brussels.
Lucy, thank you so much. Lucy Fisher there from the Financial Times, and my thanks to Olaf Gill, who we heard from a little earlier.